Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, friends. Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. Just want to say thanks so much for being here. In just a moment, we'll be joined by the one and only Justice Mosqueda. When I say that today was a wide variety, a wide-ranging amount of topics, it was a wide variety of topics on today's show. This was an all-timer with Justice. You're not going to want to miss this one. Before we get there, just really quick, Milwaukee Admirals this Saturday. All right, less than $20 gets you into the game per ticket, right? And we're going to have a ton of fun. Ed West is going to be there. Robert Brooks is going to be there. I'm going to be doing a Q&A prior to the game. I'm going to be the human hockey puck. Plus, you get an awesome Milwaukee Admirals game as well. Like I said, it's going to be a blast this coming Saturday. I'll be there. Come see me. Come enjoy the Q&A. Come enjoy a really fun night with a bunch of really cool Packers. And then, of course, we will get to the hockey game and the human hockey puck and everything like that as well. So make sure to check that out again this coming Saturday. Link will be in the description. Couple notes really quick before Justice. Vikings did defeat the Bears. That was a easy win for Minnesota. Minnesota's really good. It sucks. I hate to say it. They're a really good team. And on the flip side, we get to say that the Bears are really, really bad. So at least we get that side of it. But Vikings playing really good football. I'm going to be intrigued as to how Minnesota goes against Seattle this upcoming week. And then, of course, Minnesota-Detroit to end the season as well. So those are going to be a couple of really interesting games to kind of keep an eye on as we go through this. Also, the Falcons beat the Raiders. Kirk Cousins is not very good at this moment. It'll be interesting to see if they have the chutzpah to make that change at quarterback. But those were the two Monday night results. The Falcons winning doesn't necessarily help Green Bay. If you're looking to kind of clinch that wild card spot, it shouldn't really affect it by any real substantial way, but whatever. And then again, the Vikings winning, if you're looking for that number five seed, that certainly doesn't help. But Minnesota has two losable games really against Seattle and Detroit, and Green Bay is going to need to beat Minnesota anyway if they want any opportunity at that five seed. So there's still opportunities out there, and we'll see what Green Bay and Minnesota do the remainder of that way and if Green Bay can find their way into that number five seed. But without any further ado, let's get to the great Justice Mosqueda from acmepackingcompany.com and our wide variety of topics that we discuss on today's show. Enjoy. You know, the one and only Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on Twitter at JUMOSQ. He's joining us, of course, from acmepackingcompany.com, where you can find all of his great Packers takes along with their incredible group of writers and content aficionados. Justice, great to have you back. How the heck are you doing?
I'm doing great. I mean, big win. Big win.
How are you feeling about that one? I know, like, 30-13, a little bit of a lull in the middle. Like, what's your overall, like, how do you feel?
Oh, I mean, they did certain things that gave me genuine optimism about what they're going to do moving forward. So,
yes,
yeah, I'm not being ironic. Like, big win. I understand, like, Sam Howell is at quarterback. Their offensive line isn't good, especially in the protection game. Like, Charles Cross is good outside of that.
Not
they could replace any of those guys next year and no one would be surprised. So I'm not fixating too much on the seven sacks or whatever the heck it was. But I mean,
hi baby kitty.
But like Edgerrin Cooper stopping stuff in the middle of the field, playing good coverage. I mean, he had a massive game, and then screen game wise, I mean, I think the Seahawks even talked about it, and I think LaFleur talked about it too, where they were like, yeah, we knew that they were going to screen. We had to stop them. And it seemed like from there on out, the Seahawks weren't really able to get into all the outside receiver stuff. I mean, JSN got his touches, but, you know, DK and Lockett didn't really get the attempts that you would have thought, especially against backup cornerbacks.
Yeah, no, I've been really impressed overall. I mean, you go back now for a little bit, right? Like Waddle and Hill didn't really do the damage on the outside. The 49ers didn't really have anyone do any damage on the outside. Obviously, in this game, there was nothing. Even Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams, neither of them really went off on the outside. Like, overall, they've done a pretty darn good job of taking away the outside of the field. They've taken away the running game. It's just kind of been the middle of the field. And all of a sudden, when you're taking away a decent amount of the middle of the field in this game, and Edgerrin Cooper's looking great in that area of the field, there's not a whole heck of a lot left that you can kind of hang your hat on. Like you said, they took away the screen game. I was really impressed with Green Bay's defense overall. And yes, getting Sam Howell in there at some point was certainly advantageous. Getting an early lead for Green Bay where you're up 14-0 right away, certainly advantageous for Green Bay. But like overall, very, very happy and pleased with how this defense played in this game.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, it's only going to get better if Jair comes back, right? Fully healthy. That whole situation is a little odd. I mean, I believe the company line. I know people are like, some of this stuff isn't adding up. I'm like, he mentioned like player tracking data. Like LaFleur mentioned like player tracking data, yeah. How Jair wasn't hitting some of those numbers and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. Very in-depth thing to lie about. I don't buy it. I kind of just think that they want the guy healthy and they don't want him to get hurt again because, you know, we're so close to the playoffs.
It's the complete right call in that situation. First of all, like you can't have the same thing happen. That, I mean, can you imagine if the Packers brought him back and he played five plays again and he had to drop out and couldn't play in the rest of the game? I mean, it's nightmare scenario. Like you cannot let that happen. So if there's any even remote concern whatsoever, like you give him time and you're in the period of it now where it's just like, if he needs three more weeks, probably just give him three more weeks and you would love to get him back. I think at some
point we're going to clinch the playoffs this week.
Yes. Like, right. So, have you heard anything more on if there's anything besides like beating the Saints? If there's other, I'm assuming there will be. I haven't seen anything.
Yeah. Yet. So the way that it works out, right? Like, probably an Atlanta loss and then a Rams loss, I would guess is the scenario based off of, you know, kind of how it worked last week, right? Sure. Green Bay could have clinched last week with a win, a Rams-Niners tie, and then an Atlanta loss or tie. We're recording during Monday Night Football, so I don't know. I assume Atlanta's going to beat Desmond Ridder.
Right.
But we'll find out later, I guess. So I would assume that, you know, a Rams loss at this point and an Atlanta loss.
I don't even think it's Rams anymore because they now lead the NFC West. Seattle's 8-6. And Green Bay would have the tiebreaker with Seattle, but they have two games. They have two games and, you know, Green Bay theoretically could go 10-7. The Seahawks could theoretically go 11-6. So I would assume at 10-7, Green Bay would have the tiebreaker with the Cardinals. And then from the Falcons standpoint, Falcons would have the tiebreaker there, but they're three games behind. So assuming Atlanta wins tonight, I would assume you would need like a Seahawks loss and a Falcons loss would kind of be my guess. Or maybe again, I guess you could have the Seahawks win and the Rams lose. And because you have the tiebreaker with the Rams too. So I would say my guess, just looking at it, probably a Falcons loss either tonight as we're recording this or next week. And then either a Rams or Seahawks loss would be my guess.
Yeah, and they play each other week 17 too, which is a big part of it. So, you know, they both can't win out, which is part of the math there.
Beautiful.
I don't think it matters.
No, it doesn't. It very much doesn't.
So,
no, very much. I more was curious if like they could clinch prior to the Monday night game, right? Like, because that potentially changed. Because if it was like a Sunday noon game or something like that, if it was like the Thursday night game, then it's different because you're gonna have to play like obviously no matter what. But it does. I don't know how much that'd be interesting to see how much that would change the calculus for LaFleur if they did clinch.
I think you continue to play through the Minnesota game.
Yeah.
There's enough at stake for that Minnesota game where you could be fighting for that top seed, right?
Yep.
That you push through that. What you do in that last week against Chicago, if you're like, you know, functionally locked into that sixth spot, that's dealer's choice to me.
Yep.
I don't know if I believe in any of the rest versus rust stuff. It's been debated ad nauseum for decades at this point. Does LaFleur really sit, guy? Like, I mean, you'll probably, if the Commanders play any decent down the stretch, you could still potentially fall down to the seventh seed, even if
I think it really depends on what's at stake. Like, could they get the five seed still going, or like, are they at the five seed going into that game and they don't want to lose that? Or, you know, could they fall to the seven seed and they don't want to fall to the seven? I think those things will potentially matter. So, and I think, you know, as far as the rest versus Russ thing too, I generally agree. And I think, you know, you can, again, sort of dealer's choice it, like you said, for that final game. What I don't think you want is all of a sudden you clinch prior to the Monday night game and you feel like you can take your foot off the gas for 3 weeks. Green Bay wouldn't do that. But like, that would be the one thing where it's like, oh, you can't just go, well, we'll just take it easy against the Saints and the Vikings and, you know, the Bears in the final week, and we'll just get to the playoffs then and the wild card and then get after it then. I think that you can't do, but I'm with you. I think attack it through these next 2 weeks against the Saints and the Vikings, see where you're at after that. And if you want to make a push for the five or try to avoid the seven, or if you're just like, you know what, we would rather have guys healthy and we'll let the cards fall where they may.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, again, I think that there's enough to fight for with the Vikings the week after the Saints, that they're going to play their starters that week, no matter what. This playoff race is so goofy. I know people were looking at the AFC race today and the difference between the playoff probability of the projected seven seed right now and the projected eight. It's a 70% gap.
Yeah.
We know who the playoff teams are already, for the most part. I mean, like, the NFC West is going to be weird. The NFC South can be weird. But in terms of, like, the wild cards, like, they're kind of set in. It's like,
Commanders could theoretically still make that interesting in the wild card.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be a couple teams. Like, you're probably looking at some form of Rams, Commanders, Seahawks, Cardinals, maybe Falcons, like those four to five teams fighting for theoretically two spots, the NFC West winner and the wild card. But outside of that, like you said, the AFC is pretty much done. It's going to be Chiefs, Bills, Steelers, Texans, Ravens, Broncos, and Chargers. And then the NFC is going to have some form of Lions, Eagles, you would think Buccaneers, although I guess that one is still technically up for grabs too with the Falcons to some extent. And then Vikings, Packers, and then, like I said, there's a couple spots there. But yeah, this is, we pretty much know who's going to be in the playoffs. And I'm like, I kind of, at least if the NFC gets it right, which is I'm less concerned about, because Green Bay could have to play some of those teams, meaning like if they get it wrong. But like, the AFC has, like, it feels like has the right seven teams in. I'm not like, it feels like they've got like seven good teams. And for the most part right now, if I think if it were to end today, I think it probably has the right seven teams in the NFC as well. I don't think there's a whole ton of like, oh, like this team's getting screwed by not being in the playoffs or anything like that.
No, because the Niners are so banged up. I mean, that probably would have been the team, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah, they're just a shell of themselves right now. And yeah, I don't think you can point to anything that they've done this year and be like, yep, they are very deserving of getting in. They just haven't played good football. So,
yeah.
All right, outside of the playoff stuff, outside of getting what I think we both consider a big win in Seattle and taking care of business, what are your other, you know, sort of key takeaways? What was top of your mind in this one coming out of this game?
Great game plan by Halfley. Start by that. Did a lot of disguise stuff. We were talking about this last week where it's like, all right, you have all these personnel issues and all that stuff. And some of it probably is masked by the fact that Seattle's offensive line is maybe worse than our pass rush, and that's not a matchup advantage for us usually. But a lot of disguise stuff. They were doing a lot of inverted cover too. They blew the coverage early. We were talking about this, that corner route. Everyone thinks that it was Evan Williams who blew that because he lined up as a deep safety. I think so. That plays quarter half. And that side that got targeted was the half, right? So they're playing cover two on that side, but it's inverted cover two. So, like, you're messing with what the quarterback is looking at pre-snap. So the deep zone that you would think, like, you know, two high safeties, right? The deep zone that usually that safety has is actually what the cornerback is playing. And Evan Williams is actually playing the flat there. So if you look at the all 22 on that, the team is running snag, which is basically you have a guy on the inside running into the flat. You have a guy on the outside running a snag route. So it kind of like sits over where that receiver who ran to the flat was supposed to be. And then in between them is a corner route. Just kind of like makes a little triangle. I mean, people have been running it since, you know, Bill Walsh, old West Coast offenses, all that stuff. If you watch a high school football game, you're going to see snag every play. Clemson runs it to hell. It's like all Trevor Lawrence ran, basically. And what ends up happening is Evan Williams takes the flat like he's supposed to. And then you get cornerback Carrington Valentine and Quay Walker, both on the snag route. No one takes the deep corner. And it looks goofy live. I got tricked. I thought it was Evan Williams based off of the live view. But then when you watch the all 22, I think it definitely was Carrington Valentine, just like maybe not getting the call, not understanding what was happening. Even in a normal cover two, he would have been taking the flat. There's like no route combination or coverage and route combination that puts the corner on the snag route. Right. I don't know what Carrington was thinking on that play, but he definitely blew that. They did a bunch of weird stuff. Like, they'll start in, you know, single high defense, eight guys in the box, right? And, you know, it, from a pre-snap look there, right, you're pretty much going to get cover one, which is just man with a free safety playing a deep zone.
Yep.
Or you're going to get cover three, which is, you know, straight zone across the board. That middle of the field safety is still going to play that zone. And then the outside corners are kind of playing sideline zones, right? Packers play double inverted cover two. That safety is actually the pole runner, which is like, you know, in Tampa two, the middle linebacker basically takes anything in the middle of the field. Yep. And those corners are playing deep halves. And you're like, whoa. Teams don't usually run stuff like this, right? No. I sent you a clip, and it looks man pre-snap. The Seahawks are all spread out. You know, you have really like no deep safety. Guys are just lining up, head up on top of each other. I mean, they're not pressed up, right? They're about, you know, 8 yards or whatever it is off. And I was like, guess which guys drop? And it ends up being, you know, Evan Williams at the line of scrimmage and the slot corner are the guys who are playing the deep zones in cover two, you know, playing the deep halves. They were doing some crazy stuff. Geno Smith, I think, what was it? He was like 3 of 12 or something. I sent you the stat last night when I looked it up. He did not do well against cover two. He was cooking the backers against cover three. They had a lot of good beaters for cover three. The problem was Halfley was just throwing stuff out there and was like, okay, I'm going to let you think that we're going to be in cover three. And then we're going to spin out into stuff that you were not seeing on a weekly basis in the NFL. He was an absolute psycho in this game. So definitely think that there's, you know, more juice to squeeze out of this defense for sure from a disguise standpoint, and that they can do it. There were some issues. Right, like we talk about the Carrington Valentine blown coverage. That was really the only big blown coverage, in my opinion, in the game. But then, like, when you're doing some of these disguise things with Eric Stokes, he's backpedaling, and it looks like he's going to fall. And there were a couple of times, like, it wasn't one time. It wasn't two times. It wasn't three times. I'm not sure he's the athlete that you need to be doing some of this disguise stuff. Carrington is, he blew that coverage. So like, I understand if you're like, well, you can't trust the guy a little bit. I don't know if you could trust Stokes either. So that's one reason why I'm like, genuinely getting Jair back, I think has a pretty massive impact. Cause you start replacing replacing Stokes staffs with Jair, and they're doing all this like weird backpedaling stuff. I think that would be a significant difference if, you know, you're one of these offenses and you're like, okay, well, I have a guy who can just execute, right? And he's not going to be screwed up mentally from some of these disguises. We're going to attack some of those deep zones. I certainly trust Jair to bail out from, you know, 5 yards away from a wide receiver to playing a deep path 25 yards down the field in a backpedal and then, you know, turn his hips and be able to break up a ball or something like that.
Let me ask you this before I get into the other piece of that is, how do you see, if everyone's healthy, how do you see Bullard fitting in? Do you still see him as the primary slot guy, or are you more, you want Nixon in the slot with Carrington on the outside?
All right. I've been pretty agnostic in terms of who you want to play in the slot this entire season, right? I think that's kind of where the debate should have been the whole time. If they are going to continue to rotate Carrington Valentine and Eric Stokes, I would rather just have Nixon on the outside and have Bullard in the slot. I don't know like when we're going to get Bullard back. I mean, I still don't know how serious that injury is.
It feels kind of like a high ankle sprain or something like that, doesn't it? It kind of feels, you think
I'm
it's
just
worse?
Like assuming that he's not coming back until the playoffs.
Honestly. That would be my guess as well.
Yeah. So I'm just operating under that assumption. And if he comes back before then, great. Until then, we're going to get a whole lot of Keyshawn in the slot. Expect that. Keyshawn did not have a good game in this. I will fully admit that. Most of the bad plays were penalties, honestly. There was that wheel route. Where it wasn't really a wheel route. It was like kind of like an out and up, right? I mean, that's kind of how he
got
tricked. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I showed you the clip of that last night. That is just a really good cover three beater. It was mirrored on both sides. So you get the outside guys. They're in tight splits so that they have the room to run those out and ups. But the outside receivers run in those out and ups. And then the two slot guys, one of them was a tight end. One of them was a receiver. They have one on each side. They're in 2x2, are just running up the seams. And the way that play was supposed to play out is you're kind of playing monkey in the middle with that middle of the field safety, if that makes any sense.
Yep.
But what ends up happening is to the side that got targeted on the out and up on the left sideline, the outside receiver is running kind of like a post. And I think it was Carrington Carrington was playing on the right side for the most part. He ends up taking the post, which usually you would pass that off to the middle of the field safety. But the out and up is hitting so late that I don't know if he knew that that guy was coming off of the backside. The problem that you end up with is, you know, McKinney and him are both on the post. Nixon thinks that he has deep coverage help from Valentine. And even if they passed off the post and McKinney, you know, takes it, he was leaning toward that way. The seam pops wide open. The seam pops wide. The seam could have been, one play touchdown.
Yeah.
Just a really good beater. I mean, that's what we end up talking when we're like, what do you do there? Get a different play. But like, okay, you're not going to call any play that can get beat by cover three the entire game, right? It just turns into a game of rock, paper, scissors. That was a very strong play from the Seahawks' perspective. So I don't know.
We talked about too. It was the very first offensive play of the game for Seattle. Yeah. So like they clearly had some indicator like they were going to win on that play. Like that's their very first go-to. They get a chunk play out of it. They saw something in Green Bay's defense of like, if we get this version and maybe Green Bay comes out in that formation more often than not to start the game. They saw some tendency there early on. They ran a cover three beater, got exactly what they wanted. Geno's looking that way basically the entire time, waiting for that out and up or wheel, whatever we want to call it, to open up. Like there was something that they saw on tape that's like, we're going to get this. We're going to get a hit, you know, hit a nice 15, 20 yarder right at the beginning of this game to get us some momentum early. And all right, tip your cap. It was a really well drawn up play for that pair, you know, particular coverage.
Yeah. Again, I mean, so they got him there. They played cover three a lot better than cover two. Just from Seattle's perspective, like they were dicing up the cover three more, but there weren't a whole lot of like explosive passing plays.
And
that's a pretty big deal. You know, Grubb is a college guy. They want to throw the ball. JSN, if you look at any of the stats on like NFL Pro, like the amount of routes he's running, the amount of yards that he's getting out of the slot, like no one is playing as much slot receiver and running those routes as him. So like they kind of want to be more of like a college type, you know, spread offense, throw the ball, all that stuff. And Green Bay was really able to stop them. I mean, they were able to stop the screens. Last week, I was like, right, the last thing that we need is a defensive line that is thinking when they need to rush the passer, like, oh, got to stop the screen. They were able right. to do it in this game. They got 7 sacks. I know they didn't get a whole ton of pressures. They converted, you know, a lot of those pressures into sacks and stuff like that. It helps when Sam Howell isn't throwing the ball. And
it really was,
he had that one drive they called 3 straight pass plays. The ball never left his hand. Not that something
was the Enagbare drive, right? That was sack Enagbare, almost sack Enagbare, sack Enagbare, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Yeah. And Keyshawn could have had the sack on, I think, the last play. You know, he played the scramble drill rules, saw that guy bolting out, and he was first man on Howell, and then Kingsley finished it when he couldn't bring him down. But yeah, I mean, it's the fact that they were able to stop screens has me optimistic that Halfley is getting them ready for the plays that they're seeing. I don't know why they did not anticipate big routes over the last or the previous 2 weeks. And then you get the pass rush doing well, them doing all this disguise. I mean, if you wanted to build a game that makes me buy in, and changed my tune a little bit after everyone's like, this kid is so negative. That would have been kind of the outcome. So, yeah, I mean, genuinely great positive vibes going into this kind of like last stretch of the season.
Do you know what makes the holiday season even better? You guessed it, winning. And right now on Prize Picks, you can win up to 1,000 times your money. And Prize Picks is the absolute best place to get real money action while watching your favorite sports. Prize Picks also offers a variety of weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts, and it will come as no surprise to you at all to find out that my favorite weekly promotion is Taco Tuesday, when Prize Picks discounts select player projections up to 25% to provide even more value for your lineups. Make your Prize Picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Blake Groupie, New Orleans kicker, because I think they're going to have to settle for a lot of field goal attempts against Green Bay's defense. I'm also going with Alvin Kamara to get a variety of check down targets and Josh Jacobs to run wild in the Superdome. The best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup by using code PACKADAY. Prize Picks, run your game. It's that special holiday time of year that we all love, but you know what can make it even better? Going to live games during the holidays. If you haven't been to Green Bay for a December game, you have no idea what you've been missing. Some of my all-time favorite football memories have happened in the snow in Green Bay. As we speak, I'm going through the Game Time app and looking at tickets to Monday Night Football for the family. Not only are there multiple options to choose from, but you can see the exact view and there are multiple super deals to choose from. The best part, their lowest price guarantee, which ensures you get the best price for your seats. All right, I might take that back, actually. There's an even better feature, all-in pricing. You can toggle this feature on so that you're getting the entire cost of the event up front with no surprise fees at checkout, because guess what? We all hate surprise fees. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets this holiday season with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
So obviously the big player, one of the big takeaways in this game was Edgerrin Cooper. And then immediately the question or like the comment becomes like, he only played 34 snaps. Why is he not playing 60 some snaps in this game? And I saw Wes posted and I agree with him. I think, yeah, whatever they're doing is working. First of all, like however they're bringing him along incrementally, it's paying off. Like he's playing unbelievable football out on the field. So like the process is really working to that extent. Now, do I want him out on the field more? Yes. But this is his first game back coming off of an injury that, what did he miss? 3-4 weeks up until this point. Like he missed
and missed the preseason entirely. Yes, and is exactly. a rookie and is and a training big camp. Project. And plus it's a soft tissue injury, right? Yep. Like I don't know. Do you want to re-aggravate the hamstring when he's playing that well and you're beating the crap out of the Seahawks team? Like, I don't know. They're fun. They're going to – I would be much more concerned if it was, you know, 3 weeks after the injury and he's still only playing like half of the snaps or something like that. I'm not really worried in this game. Plus, like I mentioned, right, JSN is playing most slot snaps in the NFL and is by a pretty wide margin at this point. So what's that tell you? The Packers, we know that they match defense, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to be a nickel. So they only have two guys out there for the most part. So it's not like, you know, they're in three linebacker looks and they're just like, yeah, man, like Cooper just isn't one of our best three linebackers. It's just, you know, there's only going to be two out there. We're already down one guy. Last thing that we need is Cooper getting banged up. And now you're in a spot where you know, McDuffie and Eric Wilson are really the only linebackers that you want to play that are healthy. So, yeah, keep the guy healthy. I mean, that game was won. I was very loud and maybe annoying in the APC Slack during the game, and everyone's debating, you know, these fourth down calls and stuff like that. And I was like, guys, Seattle's not scoring 20.
No.
This game, I don't care. Seattle is not scoring 20 points in this game.
Those were the easiest decisions in the world. And it's funny because people are like, oh, Matt LaFleur, he's being a coward. He's not going for it. I'm like, if I had to guess, and just, you know, I obviously don't know Matt personally or anything like that. If I had to guess, Matt not going for it in those situations was a lot harder for him than going for, like, you, I'm sure he would have loved to have gone for it. Like, that's more in his DNA to be aggressive and go for it. I think he probably was like, all right, Matt, be smart. Just take the 3-score lead and take exactly what you're saying. Sam Howell on this team is not coming back and scoring.
Make Sam Howell earn every single yard of it.
Of course. Yeah. Like, there was never going to be a time in which they were coming back from a 3-score deficit in that game. So keep it a 3-score deficit. Keep the momentum going in your direction. Don't give them some ridiculous counterpunch where you go for it, you miss it. They get momentum, especially either before halftime or early, you know, in the second half, like early in the second half. They kept the foot on it, on the neck, and never really gave him an opportunity to breathe. And they had to keep pressing because if it was down 2 scores, I think Seattle then maybe starts feeling, all right, we can still run the football. We can be balanced. We're only down 2 scores. You're down 3 scores and you immediately are like, we got to throw the ball. We got to get back in this thing sooner rather than later. Like I said, I'm sure he would have loved in his DNA to just go for it. That was by far and away the smart move. I have no issue with that whatsoever. I wish they would have figured out the 2-minute drill to get down there quicker so that they could have gone for more. And he owned that. He absolutely owned
100%.
It. 100%. So like, I'm not giving him a get out of jail free card on everything here, but the field goals to me in both of those situations are exactly what I would have done in that same situation. As much as I would have, and I'm sure he would have loved to have gone for it, just play smart. And if you play that smart and just kind of, again, keep the foot on the neck, they're not going to do anything. So I was cool with it.
The fourth downs, I'm not really worried about. The 2-minute drill sucked.
The worst drill of the LaFleur era, I would argue. I don't think there's anything worse.
I mean, just inexplicable, right? I mean, you have, it was 50 something seconds. You have 2 timeouts. You only run 2 more plays. That math barely works.
No.
That math barely works. You have to mess it up pretty bad. And I don't know if you've talked about it yet on you know, your post game stuff or whatever you talked to Nagler on Mondays.
So it's all over. So I did a live post game, and then I did just a post game by myself since it was a late game. And then Nagler and I do Let's Talk Football and like a billion other things I got going on. But yeah, that's my usual Monday scenario.
So the way that he talked about it, right, was basically he put too much on Jordan's plate. He deferred. He gave the guy the ability to run the 2-minute offense, and he was checking into plays at the line of scrimmage and stuff like that. And then he said beyond that, he didn't want to call the timeout because so much time had already been taken off the clock that he thought, you know, well, certainly – he's not going to take another 15 seconds on top of this, right? So burning a timeout here only hurts me. They did end up taking those extra 15 seconds. And now he's like, yeah, I just got to give him plays. Which, I don't know. Like, Jordan can run the 2-minute. But he certainly got to do it quicker. I mean, that's really more of the, you just got to get better in that spot. And however you figure out to do it, do it. I think 2-minute drills are best operated when the quarterback is there, just because it's just one fewer mechanic that you have to go through, especially in a situation where, like, you know, there's 11 seconds left on the clock, right? We could throw something over the middle. Or I guess 11 seconds is a bad example because you're just getting up and spiking it. But like,
they still had a timeout.
Yeah. I mean, they held that timeout until the very end. They played that little cat and mouse game at the line of scrimmage.
Did they still have one at the end? Like, didn't they go into halftime with the timeout still in their pocket?
No, I don't think they burned it. They burned it because they had one more pass, got the timeout. I think there was like 4 seconds left. And then they were at the line of scrimmage.
And I thought the 4-yard line was the pass interference.
Yes. And that's why they had the timeout.
So I think they went into the halftime with a timeout still in their pocket.
They burned it because they played the cat and mouse game at the line. Oh, okay. Like Seattle and them both burned a timeout. We have too many timeouts. I'm tired of this. I go down to 2 timeouts in the NFL. These teams do not respect the power of the timeout enough.
You cherish
these timeouts.
Yeah, of course. But you're talking like Green Bay can't already handle 6 timeouts. Like, don't you give them down to 4. If there's one team that needs, like, give them 8 timeouts. Green Bay needs 8 timeouts. They don't need 4. Like, that's going to be a nightmare scenario. You're talking to the wrong team. If you're a fan of the Packers, they don't need less timeouts. They need as many as you can possibly give them.
I think I get mad because I watch college football and they do the weird, like when it's just like 2-point attempts in what, the third overtime now? It's just a 2-point attempt.
Just 2-point fest. Yep.
But they reset the timeouts every single time. So the defense is just, every time you're on defense, you just call a timeout.
Because even then you make them run something different.
Yeah, it takes twice as long. And I'm like, this is dumb.
It's very dumb.
Enough. Call a play and execute the play. We're trying to get the hell out of here. That's why we're having a 2-point off in the first place. I mean, get better at the two-minute drill. Eric Stokes, have we talked about the play? The mouthpiece play?
We've not talked about the play. Really quick, if they're going to do the 2-point fest, what they should do is each team gets, whether it's 3 or 4 two-point conversions, and you run the first team runs their 4 two-point conversions, you know, you get, the other team gets 1 timeout over what all of them, you run your 3 or 4, however many you get, and then the other team gets their 3 or 4 to match it, and then whatever, but like, then you're probably like, you know, it evens out a little bit more. There's better ways to do it. I'll just put it that way.
The XFL 2020, when we were there, we had a plan, and I don't think we actually ever got into overtime. And there's fewer overtimes. There are fewer overtimes because we had the 1, 2, and 3-point conversions, right? Right. So it's kind of harder to match. But the way that we had it, both teams on the field at the same time, and it just goes back and forth. Part of the problem in the college game too, you're flipping sides.
Yeah.
After every series. So guys are coming off the field. I mean, I guess, yeah, I mean, just have a turnover. Like, that's just dead play. You're not getting an extra point for that.
Okay. Like that. Before we get to Stokes, one other thing. The NFL, this is just totally random out of nowhere, but the NFL is already talking about the onside kick and maybe making it some sort of play. But do you have a proposal, onside, new onside kick, old onside kick? Like, do you want the 4th and 15? What do you want to see happen for onside kick recovery?
I don't, the coaches are going to, all right.
I broke justice.
I've literally, okay, so I do have genuinely a little bit of insight here, right? Okay. I guess my title technically was director of analytics when we were with the XFL, when Optimum Scouting was with the XFL. We gave them the exact percentages of where we needed to put the 1, 2, and 3-point conversions for it to be balanced. It was totally fine. No one had an issue with it. We sent it to the league. We sent it to the coaches for feedback, all that stuff. Everyone complains. The coaches mess up where the yard line should be because they're like, well, I imagine that it actually should be at these spots.
Just because of reasons.
Yes, because of reasons. And then everyone just goes for 2-point conversions because it was like mathematically the most just sound like, think of it from like an EPA perspective, yep. right? We're dealing with this on the kickoff already, the normal kickoff.
Yep.
So my apprehension to the onsides is like, everyone's going to say like, okay, we need like a first and 15. Cause it was like the onside recover rate is like 10%, which is what it was in the normal kickoff, right?
Once they changed the rules, right? Like once they changed it, that you couldn't overload one side.
Well, not even that. If you're excluding surprise onside kicks.
Okay.
So surprise onside kicks had like a recovery rate of like 30%. And that was boosting those numbers up. If you looked at just onside kicks in the fourth quarter, it's always been like 10%. So if you're trying to replicate that rate and get the same amount of, you know, conversions or however you want to think about it, it should be a first and 15. Fourth and 15. Sorry. Yeah. These coaches are going to bitch and they're going to moan and it's going to be like first and 25. And then everyone's going to hate the play. And we're going to say, you know, they ruined it. Like it's not a viable play. It's not balanced, all this stuff. So my apprehension is just like the coaches are going to mess it up. The coaches are going to mess it up because they don't want to see the math. It's all about gut feeling to them. And they're like, well, I would play it differently. No, you wouldn't. It's a fourth and 15. You knew what the stakes were. We have all this data from NFL history to look at. The other thing is like, I guess it kind of like, I mean, if you have a good quarterback, you probably want this, right? Yeah. Jordan Love? I believe Jordan Love can convert a fourth and 15 at a higher rate than other NFL teams. So I guess that, you know, that would help the Packers. But if you're, I don't know, the Las Vegas Raiders. Yeah, exactly. The Las Vegas Raiders, you're probably like, a fourth and 15 isn't too enticing for me. I'd probably rather chance it with a kicker.
Do you think if they do go that direction, if it is something like a fourth and 15, is it still going to be fourth quarter? You have to be losing, you know, sort of situation, or do you think that they would go fully in the direction of you can do this at any time?
Yeah, especially. I mean, do you really want to make quarterbacks more valuable in this league, man?
The NFL might want you.
I guess, but then like, yeah, it's just Mahomes on the field all the time. And then you're kind of playing keep away.
I also think like once you get a team, like a fourth and 15 is something that you practice and have like a certain, but like once you, like once that becomes a thing that you like, especially if it's available to you at any time, and it becomes a practiced like thing that you are specifically drawing up plays for, like I guarantee you, if you had all of a sudden all these coaches spending an inordinate amount of time on fourth and 15, like you're going to all of a sudden start seeing those percentages go up on fourth and 15 because teams are specifically game planning and planning for those very specific situations. So you're going to, theoretically defenses would as well. So maybe it evens out, but I would think that you're going to have it be a little bit more skewed in conversions when teams start particularly planning for that very specific play.
And to delete this clip, because this is how we get fourth and 25. This is the same exact logic that coaches will push. You know what,
Justice? I think it should be harder, not easier. I don't want to see the team that's worse, that's losing, have a easy opportunity to get themselves back in the game. In fact, I'm almost totally fine with the way that it is right now. Signed 2014 Green Bay Packers. Like I'm fine with the team that's supposed to lose the game, not having a great chance to do something that is fluky at the end to get them back in the game. And I know like maybe like that's what they want. They want drama and extra competitiveness at the end. I kind of just want the team that's been better throughout the course of the game to win that game more often than not.
I will say the big problem that they're going to have to deal with is the penalties. The penalties is going to be a huge thing because you're talking about throws at least 15 yards, or maybe they're thrown shorter of the sticks, but like, you're talking about throws in the middle of the field and you're talking about deep throws on the outside. And what is that like? All these head and neck area hits, right? That's 15 yards. DPI, that's 15 yards. That is a massive, massive momentum swing. If it's not just fourth and, I mean, it's 4th and 15 to retain possession, right? Yep. From a momentum swing, I mean, those could be some of the most just killing penalties that we've seen in the NFL. So
let me ask you this. Let's say they did do 4th and 15. Is this 4th and 15 from a specific yard line? Would it be from the 15 yard line, being like a red zone, like sort of situation where you have to convert it almost like a conversion? Do we have any idea on that? Oh, we're going totally down a rabbit hole here. And I believe
it's from the spot. From the kickoff spot.
Got it.
Cause yeah, field position is obviously going to matter there.
Got it. I think
you just roll straight into offense, right? Maybe it's a,
so you're basically saying we'll take the ball. We get the ball. We're starting fresh.
Yeah, right. You're on offense. It's 4th and 15 at this spot. That whatever happens after there. Yeah. Whatever happens. If you get 3 yards, the ball advances, 3 yards, and then
the other team takes over. Team.
Yeah. It's an offensive play. Yeah. We talked about it a lot with XFL.
Interesting. I don't know. Things that'll be very, very intriguing coming out. I am sure that the very wise NFL will not screw this up in any way, shape, or form. And the stewards of the game will take great care and painstaking detail to make sure they get this 100% right with no faults whatsoever. And it will not be scrutinized in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, no. Everyone will love it. Everyone will love it.
As long as they call it the dynamic, 4th and 15. If they call it the dynamic 4th and 15, we should be fine no matter what. Let's talk about the offense really quick now that we went off on a very bizarre random tangent out of nowhere. Jordan Love, your thoughts on his play in this game and the overall offensive efficiency?
He was feeling himself in that game. I mean, he had some pretty amazing passes. Even like one of the misses, he breaks the pocket, goes to the right, throws across the body. He ends up missing the guy. But he's throwing that thing 100 miles an hour. And you're just like, good God, who do you think you are, right? Those are the moments that remind me that, like, so I'm on the West Coast, right? So I know a lot of people who idolize Kobe Bryant. They all kind of act like that with that sort of level of confidence, right? That's why he's their dude. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Jordan Love's one of the Kobe guys. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. I always forget that every once in a while because he's not like overconfident in like press availability or stuff like that, right? But when he's feeling himself, he's just like, I'm blacked out, dude. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I'm just sending the thing. I believe it.
There's some Antoine Walker, just 40-foot three-point shots going up for Jordan Love every once in a while. That I just love the... Yes, absolute, confidence in him, no questions asked. And like you said, when he's feeling it, I will say though, like we're talking now 5 games post bye. Chicago, one overthrow to Tucker Kraft, 49ers game, one throw where he tries to hit Watson, the defender undercuts it, never saw the defender. Watson has to play defensive back, no turnover worthy plays versus Miami, no turnover worthy plays against Detroit, no turnover worthy plays in this game. Like he is playing a very efficient, clean style of football. One interception since the bye week. And again, that was just on an overthrow. Good decision. Just overcooked it. I'm very, very pleased and happy. My bold prediction at the bye week was that Jordan would only throw 3 more interceptions the remainder of the regular season. Feeling pretty good about that prediction right now. Knock on everything.
We can get Toyota-thon sponsorships out of this thing if we keep talking about it.
I talked about this a little bit today though. Like, well, first of all, Jordan has Bergstrom. So I unfortunately think he's probably going to miss out on that bag. Also, if Toyota is smart, they will let this thing cook on its own. Cause as soon as Toyota gets involved in any way, it becomes so lame and stupid, right? We all hate it then. Oh, shut up, Toyota, get the hell out of here. This is our thing. It's not your thing. So like right now they're getting all the free advertising and everyone's talking about Toyota-thon and all of this. As soon as they try to attach themselves to it at all, it's like, it just kills it. It just kills it immediately. So if they're smart, they won't touch this with 1,000-foot pole and they'll just let it keep going organically.
Yeah. No, I mean, protection held up well in this game too. Josh Jacobs is still Josh Jacobs. Christian Watson has been playing pretty well since the bye. We talked about Jaden Reed, right, last week, and we're like, you know, is this something to worry about that he can't get touches? And was like, you know, we can manufacture some of this stuff, gets a decent amount of manufactured touches in this game, even though, you know, he kind of wasn't the star of the show in the passing game. Offense keeps struggling along. I'm not worried about the offense being able to score as long as they can protect guys. I mean, the Lions game was a little rough for them, especially early on in terms of protections. But outside of that, I mean, I have no doubts that this offense can like get into a shootout if they need to.
Yeah. I think that Detroit game was a one-off, and even like by the second half, it seemed like they pretty much had it figured out and are like, all right, we're back in this thing.
It was just Zach Tom having the worst first quarter that he's ever had in his career. It was just nuts. I was like, what the hell has gotten into him? Like, I thought like maybe he was hurt or something. No, he just
bad roll of the dice. Quarter. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he realized, oh, wait, I'm Zach Tom. And then he was fine pretty much the rest of the game after that. So, yeah, that was a very bizarre first quarter for him. It was like everyone just seemed tight in that first. I have no concerns about the O-line, especially when it comes to pass pro. They settled into this one very easily against Seattle. No real issues. Leonard Williams had that one play in the backfield on a key third down. Outside of that, they kept him in check. Yeah, they're going to be just fine. The other thing I'll say, too, is like, I know a lot of people will point to like Aaron Jones coming back and sort of them making that really great offensive run at the end of last year. It also felt, and there were some different injuries that took place at wide receiver at the second half of last season. It also felt at times like they figured out in the second half of last year exactly how to use Tucker Kraft and Dontavian Wicks and Bo Melton, yep, and Jaden Reed, sure, and Dobbs and Watson. It felt like they figured out their roles. This week gave me a little bit of that feel again of like, all right, they're starting to once again figure out where Romeo Doubs is winning, where Christian Watson is winning, how to get Jaden Reed some of those manufactured, not that he needs just manufactured touches, but still getting him some of those manufactured, yeah, touches. You know, I didn't think they necessarily used it, obviously a ton of Tucker Kraft in this game, but they know how to utilize him as well. Like, it kind of had that feel to me of like everyone sort of falling back into place, and maybe that's just Romeo being back as well. But like, now they have all of those different flavors of weapons that they can use when they need to. And it was almost like they had that re-epiphany of like, oh yeah, that's right, these are when we use each of these wide receivers in these specific scenarios, and they can go to it when they need to. It just felt like a little bit of that, what we saw at the end of last year.
Yeah. And you know, if you're not following the Seahawks a good amount, like they have two really good corners.
Very good corners.
Yeah. They have two really good corners, and that, what was it, the first? Yeah, it was the first Dobbs touchdown where he's just squatting Tariq Woolen for 5 yards and then gets hit by another guy and takes him into the end zone too. That scared Seahawks fans. They're still thinking about this right now. I'm letting you know, as someone who lives in the Pacific Northwest, like, they cannot stop thinking about that play. And they're like, what the hell? And I'm thinking, what the hell? Because I've never seen Dobbs make a play like that before. I was like, where strong did this legs come from?
Strong legs, Romeo Doubs? Strong legs? Are we going strong from strong legs hands to strong legs? Hashtag strong legs?
Yes. Yeah, I got spammed when that play went live. The second touchdown, too. I mean, just, oh my God, what an incredible play by both Love and Dobbs on that. Fun can game.
Go ahead.
No, that was it.
No, I was just going to say, can we talk about, like, that was the most fun I think I've ever seen Romeo Doubs have in a game. Like, he was goofing around, messing around. He's swimming on like the goal line after a pass interference play. Like, I don't know. Like, that was a different sort of Romeo. Like, I just loved, like, he looked like a kid in a candy store out there, and he played like it. Like, heck, sign me up for more of that Romeo Doubs. I was loving every second of it.
Yeah, I wonder how much of his people came out. I mean, it is West Coast game, right?
Yeah, maybe.
You can get to make the LA trip. So, yeah, I mean,
got to send him up to Seattle.
Think back to that Rams game, right? And people were like, what do you do when he comes back? And, you know, people were looking at like punishment moving forward, right? And my point was always just like, look, if you want to get over the thing and work with him, you kind of just got to let it pass by. And that served as the suspension and all that stuff. And that was the punishment. If you want to get back to regularly scheduled programming, you got to go back to regularly scheduled programming. Right. And I think that approach has certainly benefited him. It's not like he pulled a Devondre Campbell and just refused to get in the game in the third quarter and left into the locker room. Shout out to him. I do like that we have allies in the screw Devondre Campbell bandwagon now, right? Yeah. It's like us Falcons fans, Niners fans, just handshake emoji. Just like, screw this guy. He's got a bad attitude and he can't run anymore.
How do Cardinals fans feel? They only got 1 year of him, right? I think it was just 1 year in Arizona.
I don't really care. I think they got bigger issues. Yeah. They're like, fair. Dude, Josh Rosen was our quarterback.
That's probably very fair. Yeah, that's a crazy situation. No, but I will say this about from a Green Bay standpoint, I still think they get A pluses in my book for how they handled both the Jair situation and the Romeo, you know, suspension and situation really over the course of the last 365 days, right? This is probably right around last year when the Jair situation happened. I think both of those can go in complete opposite directions where if you like, and I give credit to Jair too, because like Jair could have been like, you're going to suspend me. I'm an all pro. Screw you guys. Trade me in the, I'm not coming back this year. Trade me in the off season. I want nothing more to do with this. And it really seemed like right away he understood, he took to it. Like, I don't know how that conversation took place, but it definitely felt like from that point forward, both he and the Packers were in a better situation. And it felt like both sides learned from it. Same thing with Romeo. I loved how they handled that situation. I think they used the suspension to their benefit in a great way. I think it benefited Romeo. I think it benefited the Packers. And then they basically used that as a, we're going to do this. You come back, fresh slate. We're starting over. We're not going to hold it against you. Let's just get this thing back and rolling. Same thing with Jair. And I think it was about the most perfect way that you could have handled both of those situations. Like I said, I A plus for Green Bay, but also to Romeo and Jair for how they handled it too. Cause that could have gone again, really negative in a variety of different ways. Everyone was professional about it, handled it the right way. And I think everyone's kind of come out better for it.
Yeah. I think again, you can't not punish, right? But then post-punishment, the goal is to move on.
Yep.
The goal is to move on. And you have to keep that in mind. So, yeah, I think they handled it the right way.
While the holiday season is always an amazing time of year, it's also super easy to lose track of your finances and overdo the spending while buying gifts, hosting dinners, or dressing up for holiday parties. That's where Kickoff can help. I discovered Kickoff online while I was looking for ways to improve my credit and quickly found out how easy it was to sign up and how helpful it can be to improve your overall credit. If your credit is under 600, you could jump like 28 points in your first month. You heard that right, your first month. You can start building credit immediately for only $1 in your first month. And if you're still unconvinced, just know that Kickoff has over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store and 98% of them are 5 stars. Worry less about your credit and enjoy the holidays more with Kickoff. For a limited time, get your first month free. Go to kickoff.com/packaday today. Hurry for a month of free Kickoff without the C. Get kickoff.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate the offer. Offer applies to new Kickoff customers first month only. Subject to approval, average impact of 28 point increase is first month based on Equifax Vantage Score 3.0 changes for Kickoff customers with starting credit below 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit card activity outside Kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer subject to change. Individual results may vary. All right. Last but not least, Packers Saints. What are you looking for in this one? Anything you're already, obviously we've got a Kamara injury. We're going to have to keep an eye on a Derek Carr injury. I would assume it would be Spencer Rattler. If it's not Derek Carr, I don't think Haener's getting another chance. So, Taysom Hill, obviously out for the year. They've got some beat up players, but also under Rizzi prior to this game, they had won 3 of 4 and gave Washington everything they could handle. Had a 2-point conversion opportunity for the potential win at the end of this one. So like they're the fighting Rizzies right now. Like they're given that they're all, and they're definitely a little bit more competitive.
Rattler is 0-4 in the 4 games that he's played extensive playing time. I'm not buying it.
That's everyone else's fault. It's not Spencer Rattler's fault. He's going to be good. I'm stamping my eyes and we'll see.
He was like the most interesting prospect, I thought, from the quarterback class last year, right? Yep.
He was really fun, interesting prospect.
He was the only guy with really that had like starting caliber tools who wasn't like a first round pick. Packers big. I don't think that team's consistent enough. I mean, they've decayed for years, and the decay is only going to continue as long as they keep pushing cap hits forward.
It's a nightmare.
It's not good. They've bombed out on some of these draft picks, like who's the Clemson Brian Brisee. like that one's not panning out. They, you know, the Trevor Penning thing, God bless them. They've fell for, you know, quote unquote finishing videos, right? Like him finishing plays with pancakes.
I still remember Mike Wall talking to him about Penning before the draft. And he's like, just exactly that. He's just like, yeah, it's great that he can finish. Good luck with everything else. And yeah.
Like he's pissing off teammates because he's doing that in practice. I remember down at the Senior Bowl, he was doing that. And dudes were like, I'm going to fight you, dude. Like, get off of me. Right. Yeah. Which, like, maybe you want a little bit of that when you're going against him. Here's the problem. Right. You're practicing against that guy three times a week. Right. And he doesn't seem to know how to turn that off.
Nope.
And so guys kind of get tired of that really quick when you're doing that stuff in practice. No, I mean, the Saints are going to play a bunch of man coverage. Generally, when you know, you get man coverage, the Packers' answer is deep shots to Watson and, you know, throwing all the back shoulder fade stuff to Romeo Doubs. So I would assume that they're going to have relatively big games. I think if Jaden Reed is going to get a bunch of touches, I mean, unless he catches like a slot fade or something like that, I would assume that Reed is probably going to have to get it on some of these manufactured touches and stuff like that. I think it's probably going to be a bigger Doubs and Watson game. And obviously the Watson stuff is kind of going to be a little bit more volatile. I wouldn't be surprised if he was targeted once for 40, if he was targeted, you know, three times for 135, right?
It's going to be the MVS versus Christian Watson fest. They're both going to go three catches for 180 and two touchdowns.
Yeah, sure. Why not? I forgot MVS was down there.
Oh yeah. He had that like a couple of like amazing games as soon as he got down there. And then I think once Carr went out, it probably changed a little bit, but yeah, he was having like a little bit of a resurgence. It was, I think, was it Solak who posted something? Maybe it wasn't Solak. I forget who posted it. It's like, finally, after having years of spending time with Aaron Rodgers, Josh Allen, and Patrick Mahomes, finally MVS finally gets a quarterback in Derek Carr that can unlock all of his talents. It's like just chef kiss. I forget who it was. I don't know if it was Solak or not, but just chef kiss, perfect tweet.
Great, great stuff. I do want to mention before we get out of here.
You bet. Floor is yours.
Eric Stokes, you are going to bring me to an early grave, dude.
Oh, yeah. We forgot. We didn't talk about this play.
The mouthpiece play. So the touchdown that the Seattle Seahawks had. Zach Charbonnet up the right sideline. It was a pin and pull play. Both the Seahawks and Packers did a good job of getting in minus splits, which is, you know, you have a slot receiver and outside receiver, but they're basically in like tight end alignment because, you know, how tight that they are to the formation and stuff like that. Or nub, which is just, you know, it's just one tight end on one side of the formation. There's no one on the outside. How do you handle that? Do you corner over? Do you have a corner on that guy? Okay, the corner's going to be in the run fit. Those are all issues that presented themselves in this game on both sides. The Packers and the Seahawks did a good job of it. On this play, they're in a minus split. So, you know, you get two wide receivers onto the right sideline, but they're, I don't know, maybe 5 yards away from the offensive tackle. It's a pin and pull play. Everyone blocks down. Cornerback is supposed to step up and fit and, you know, take on the kickout block. That kickout block is obviously coming from an offensive lineman. That's the position that these guys are put in. You can't really protect that guy. The corner has to take on that block. Here's the problem. Eric Stokes doesn't have his mouthpiece in. And he realizes about 2 seconds in, I got to get this thing in. Because, you know, there's a 300-something pound offensive lineman trying to kick me out. Kind of sidesteps to the sideline while he's fumbling, trying to get the mouthpiece in. He's basically like a yard away from the sideline. Opens up this big gap for Zach Charbonnet to run through. Fails to get the mouthpiece in. Just takes on the block, said, screw the mouthpiece. Okay, I'm going to take on the block. Kind of plays a little patty cake. I mean, he's a yard from the sideline. The offensive lineman, I mean, the guy's functionally blocked himself just with his feet, right?
Yep.
Pushes him. He ends up catching part of the mouthpiece. Mouthpiece goes flying. Eric Stokes is now mouthpiece-less entirely. Stokes is like, gets pushed back, is, you know, complete standstill, just watching the play. And is like, what the hell just happened? Zach Charbonnet passes him. Once he's like 2 yards ahead of him, Stokes is like, oh, I got to start running and pursuing this guy. Too little, too late. touchdown.
The most, Andy, the most annoying thing about high school football is having to constantly remind high school kids to put your damn mouthpiece in.
Yep.
It saves your teeth. You could bite your damn tongue off. Don't do that. Wouldn't advise that. And it helps with the whole concussion issue, you know, saving your brain and all that stuff, right? The NFL does so much stuff for player safety. How is it not mandatory that you wear a mouthpiece when you're on the football field? This is the, I know I sound like super boomerish, right? And generally I lean with let the kids do what they want. It's right. Not hurting anybody. This whole trend of like just having the mouthpiece like hang down on the little strap and stuff like that. I don't get it. Or like having it like tucked in the helmet and it's like an antenna. Like,
yeah,
I've seen multiple mouthpieces in now. As shark, like, put your damn mouthpiece in, dude. For your sake.
For no other reason, too, it maybe will help you actually get engaged in the play and maybe stop a touchdown run from happening, if nothing else.
Dude.
Oh, Eric Stokes.
And maybe it's a communication thing. But you know what helps? Having one of those half mouthpieces that just go around the top, right? Instead of having the thing that can dangle like an accessory, like it's like a, what is it? The card dice that you have that hang from the mirror off of your face mask.
Doesn't do much there.
This is equipment. You are unprepared because of accessories and you gave up a touchdown. This is NFL football. What the hell are we doing?
You know what's going to happen, by the way? I'm already resigned myself to it. Eric Stokes is going to be back next year. I don't know how. I don't know why.
I'm leaving. I'm turning my camera off. How dare you? Are you kidding me?
I've seen it. Like,
there's no way, dude.
How many times did Kevin King get second and third? Kevin King's still playing for the Falcons. Like, I don't know. I'm telling you right now. Like,
playing. I don't know.
Okay. All right.
Dude, no. There's no. Dude, if Stokes is back, I'm genuinely going on a hunger strike. And like, that's fine.
Well, AJ Dillon's going to be back too. Like, just bring the whole gang back. Josh Myers is going to be back. It's going to be Josh. They're free. Their whole offseason is going to be just making sure they get Eric Stokes, Josh Myers, and AJ Dillon back. That's going to be
at least Josh Myers. We don't have a backup center. I guess we have Monk if you count that. But like, I don't know if AJ Dillon would talent wise would be a top three running back on this team
or top four. I don't even know if that.
Who's on the PS? Who's on the practice squad?
No, because you have Jacobs, you have Brooks, you have Wilson.
Oh, Lloyd. I forgot Lloyd. I forgot about Lloyd.
I think, honestly, if Dillon says again, I'll sign a 1 year, not even the vet bonus thing, just a 1 year vet minimum, zero signing bonus deal. I want to be in Green Bay. I think he goes into camp as running back five. That's if they don't draft and or sign an undrafted free agent dude that they like. And I think he would need two injuries probably in order to make it on the 53.
Brooks already kind of does the Dillon stuff and he's going to be cheaper.
Better, arguably.
I'm sure Dillon is a better pass protector
than Brooks.
When they go into like the chip stuff, when they're in empty and he's playing the wing and he's on a pass rusher, I think he's better. But I'd rather give him the ball. Like, he's not going to stumble over his own feet.
That experiment is
Stokes being recent, dude. If that happened, Andy, I will hunt you, dude.
I will hunt myself. Just
the taken. I will find you and I will kill you.
I'm a man of a certain set of skills.
Yes.
And anyone that talks about bringing Eric Stokes back, I will find you. Yes. And yeah.
It's just you and LaFleur. That's it. It's you two. Maybe Brian too. Maybe Goody.
I mean, trust me, you have no idea how much I hope I'm just resigned myself to it already. That it's going to be like, they're going to do like a 1 year. It's going to be like something more than you. It's going to be like a 1 year, $2.5 million deal. And like 2 million of it, it's going to be guaranteed. And I'm just going to be like, I don't know how to explain this with any sort of reason as to why this is happening. I'm telling you, especially, can you imagine too, if they decide to move on from, I don't think Nixon's going anywhere. I think he will be back for sure. The Jair,
he has too much value playing inside and out. Plus the question,
they love him. They love Keyshawn Nixon. They like, there's nobody in that building that doesn't have a full Keyshawn Nixon heart. Like they love Keyshawn Nixon. I don't know if I can say that, but they absolutely love him. So I don't think he's going anywhere. If they decide to move on from Jair, which I think is like coin flippy at this point, like I honestly don't know what direction that goes.
Are you putting Stokes in the starting lineup right now?
No, I'm just saying, like, I can see them.
It's like, Andy, I will find you. Dude, this is not a joke.
In the starting lineup now, they can't even get to the point that the dude with an interception this week might be better than the guy that hasn't had a pass breakup or interception since his rookie season. Like, I'm just telling you. Like,
I don't want to do this, dude. Andy, I like you. You have a family, Andy.
I don't want it anymore. I've resigned myself. I'm not saying I want it. I'm not saying it should happen. I'm just saying I've resigned myself to the fact that I'm going to be going to training camp next year, looking out there, and there's going to be number 21. And for some reason, they're going to have a first round pick that looks amazing. And you know who's going to be lining up starting across from whomever as the starting corner? It's going to be number 21. I know how these things go, Justice. I just know I've been a part of it for too long. I have too much PTSD with some of this stuff. He was a first round pick. You can't get rid of that guy. He's a staple part of this team.
He's a member of the community at this point.
He is. You can't let him go. Oh, Justice, you're the best. Where can we find all of your incredible work, and where are you going to be writing your whole spiel on why Green Bay should not resign Eric Stokes in the offseason now? Like, you're it'll be like a what's your final paper in college called? Your thesis or whatever, your thesis paper? Yeah,
we had a capstone at Portland State.
Okay. Which,
another reason unserious school. It's a degree mill. If you want to go to school with a bunch of people wearing scripts, Portland State. That's my advice.
There you go.
AcmePackingCompany.com. If you want the video of the whole mouthpiece gate, we got that up.
It's hilarious, by the way. It is.
You're going to have, yeah.
Did you post the slow motion of his thing going flying? Oh, thank God. That's why I was losing it the entire time, because the whole time you're explaining it, I'm playing in my mind the slow motion mouthpiece. Just, it looks like
You lost the mouthpiece, man. I can't believe it. Put in your damn mouthpiece. If you're a kid here, please, for the love of God, put in your damn mouthpiece. It is not cool to have your teeth shattered or bite your tongue or something like that for accessories.
It needs to be a PFF score. Mouthpiece is lost over the course of the season.
Dude, I'll do screw the PFF. I'll do a PSA. We got to start running commercials on this.
There you go.
It's an epidemic. I don't know who made it cool to not wear a mouthpiece.
Steph Curry chewing his mouth guard, never really putting it in. Just chewing it.
Basketball.
I'm just saying, like, that's who made, if you think of like somebody who's constantly playing with their mouth guard and not actually putting it in, to me, the first name that comes to mind is Steph Curry.
Yeah. AcmePackingCompany.com. We got you covered this week. Obviously, we're going to cover all the injuries, and I don't think Derek Carr is going to play. I definitely think it's going to be Radler. Packers, what? They're not practicing until it's pushed the day late, right?
Pushed the day later. Yeah.
LaFleur's going to meet with the press on Tuesday.
So Wednesday's the off day. Thursday's the first practice. Yeah.
So things are going to get a little weird scheduling wise. Having two Thursday games in a row, Sunday night football, and then playing on a Monday. Very weird. Very weird schedule. I feel like I haven't been able to get in the groove for like a month.
I don't know what's going to happen with that Vikings game either. I still think there's a good chance that gets flexed to Sunday night football. I mean, just if you look at the like slate of games that like things that could get moved, I think there's 0% chance it stays at noon. I think it'll either go to 3:25 or to, the Sunday night football game. If there's any chance it stays at noon.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be. I mean, that's like Fox game of the week, all that stuff, right? APC, baby. That's where you can find me.
Go check it out. This is probably our best episode ever. I can say that, I think, with
I think I've threatened to hunt you before on an episode. So
it's been overdue. Somebody's had to say it. I knew it was coming eventually. I didn't know who it was going to be from. I didn't know if it was going to be you or Brettel or Nagler. Or I kind of expected Carmen Vitale, to be honest. But It does make sense in hindsight. Justice, you're the absolute best. Go follow him on Twitter at JUMOSQ. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Justice and I. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.